time for the E21 Go Sports Podcast. Now, here's your host, Easton Durant.
Hi, welcome to E21 Go Sports. I'm Easton Durant, and in today's episode, I'll be talking about NFL, MLB, and NBA news. To start this off with a little bit of MLB news, Houston Astros righty Zach Greinke on Monday has been scratched from the start, and that Cy Young contender Justin Verlander would start Tuesday's game four against the Tampa Bay Rays. Greinke was following two straight gems from Verlander and Gerrit Cole, but his start was very different. Greinke allowed six runs over two and two-thirds innings, including three home runs to three different left-handed batters. Kevin Kiermaier, who had a three-run shot in the second. Later, G-Man Choi and Brandon Loy added solo shots. The Rays won 10-3, cutting Houston's lead in the series to 2-1. Greinke gave up all of his homers on off-seed pitches, the kind of offerings that were supposed to flash in a productive contrast to the heat featured by Verlander and Cole. Instead, he became the first Houston pitcher to give up three home runs in a single playoff game. While the Astros were still down 2-1 lead in the series, the loss left manager AJ Hinch with a dilemma. He had not yet put a game four starter, instead placing both leading candidates, rookie right-hander Jose Urquidy and veteran lefty Wade Miley in the bullpen for the first three games. Miley appeared in relief on Monday, going two and two-thirds innings, allowing 63 pitches. Sorry, throwing. Rather than calling on the hard-throwing but inexperienced Urquidy, Hinch had decided to go with Verlander on Tuesday. Hinch said he's one of the best pitchers in the world. It's no more complicated than that. Verlander went seven scoreless innings in Game 1 on Friday, throwing 100 pitches while holding Tampa Bay to one hit and striking out eight. Though he'll be working Tuesday on 3 days rest, if Verlander is still able to lead the Astros to a series-clinching win in Game 4, he will likely start Game 2 of the ALCS on Sunday at Houston, bumping Cole up to the Game 1 assignment. This will be a new experience in Verlander's career. He started Game 3 of the 2011 ALDS against the Yankees on 3 days rest, going eight innings, allowing four runs and striking out 11. However, he had thrown just one inning at a grand-shortened outing previous to that, so Verlander has never taken the mound on 3 days rest after a full start in either the regular season or the postseason. Verlander said, "I'm going to approach it just like the first game, and a lot like my other playoff games I've pitched, which is kind of my gut. It feels like a win-or-go-home game." As for Verlander, he's no stranger to potential elimination games. He's won four of them during his career, tied for the most in MLB history with John Smoltz, Curt Schilling, Randy Johnson, and Clay Carrell, who also won four such games. They were joined by Tampa Bay's Charlie Morton, who had won his fourth career elimination game at Greinke's expense in Game 3. Moving over to other MLB news, the Atlanta Braves started left-hander Dallas Keuchel on short rest Monday afternoon in the NL Division Series 5-4 Game 4 to the loss to the St. Louis Cardinals. Keuchel last pitched in Thursday on Game 1, meaning he will work on just 3 days rest in St. Louis. The former Cy Young winner just threw 74 pitches in the series opener, but Monday's contest marked just the third time in his career he started on a short rest. Snitker has indicated Sunday night that Keuchel was an option to start Game 4, but he said he would wait until Monday to give his final decision. With an off day Tuesday, Snitker also noted that nearly all of Atlanta's pitchers were available in Game 4. The only pitcher who will likely not available is Game 3 starter Mike Soroka. Mike Folwinski, who is expected to start Game 5 in Atlanta if necessary, is available if something happened, you know. The Braves took a 2-1 lead Sunday with a 3-1 victory in Game 3, highlighted by a dramatic 3-run ninth-inning rally. Keuchel pitched 4 2/3 innings and did not record a decision in Atlanta's Game 1 loss, allowing one run and five hits with three walks and no strikeouts. The two-time All-Star is 4-2 with a 3.20 ERA and 11 career postseason starts, 11 postseason games, including 10 starts. The Los Angeles Angels will interview Joe Maddon for the vacant managerial position on Monday after he was fired by the Cubs organization. Maddon is the first known candidate at this moment, though Angels GM Billy Epler said earlier this week that the team will undergo a traditional search. The Angels, who finished 72-90, fired Brasall Smith after only one season on the first day of their offseason. Epler, owner R.D. Monroe, and president John Caprone then poured through a list of candidates. The following evening, but Maddon has long been considered the front job for the runner. Maddon, who is 65, spent 13 years in the Angels organization, the last six as Mike Soska's bench coach from 2000 to 2005. Maddon then went on to manage the low-budget Rays, a highly successful nine-year run that included the franchise's first trip to the World Series. From there on, Maddon led to the Chicago Cubs their first title in more than 100 years. He was dismissed after five seasons. Now, what I kind of understood about the Cubs, why he was fired from them, they were terrible. They were, sorry, not terrible, but not as expected, because they were supposed to be good, because they just came from a good year. They were 84-78. They were seven games behind the Cardinals, five games behind the second place Brewers. It was just a tough year for the Cubs. Now they'll trying to do other things. One recent news for them was that Chris Bryant was up for trades. I don't know who thought that would be a good idea to trade one of their best players, and the Texas Rangers. Even then, I don't know really what they would offer. A couple prospects, picks for the next, 10 years, maybe? I know that's a crazy thing, but there's really no player on the Rangers who's really Chris Bryant potential, even though he's been up and down the past year. So that's been bad years for him. Moving on, the Yankees beat the Twins 8-2 to go up on the series 2-0. Didi Gregorius hit a slump-busting grand slam during a 7-run third inning as the Yankees pummeled the Minnesota Twins again, cruising to an 8-2 victory Sunday for a 2-0 lead in the series. Uber driver turned rookie big leaguer Randy Dobnak struggled in an unexpected start, and the Cubs lost their record 15 consecutive postseason game, including 12th straight to the Yankees. The latter is the longest postseason skid for one club against another in Major League history, topping Boston's dominance over the Angels from 1986 to 2000. Minnesota hasn't won a single playoff game since Johan Santana beat the Yankees in their 2004 Division Series opener exactly 15 years earlier. Twins manager Rocco Baletti said, "Our guys know that we can turn it around." Coaches and players on both sides have downplayed that history, which is most, it's all too familiar for fans of Minnesota, where the team will play Monday's Game 3 in the best-of-five series. Boone said, we'll have all kinds of firepower ready to go Monday. Gregorius's blast blew Game 2 wide open as the Yankees battered around the inning. The switch hitter staggered after connecting for the first time since September 10th, hitting one from his bat from one hand to another and mashing on bubblegum while he watched the ball fly. Gregorius is set to become a free agent after the season. He batted 194 during September and was 0-3 in Game 1. Boone said, "I expect this from GD. Just when you think you've got him down, he's got a big swing in him." Boone had predicted that if Gregorius could find a hole, big hits might follow. Sure enough, Didi hit an infield single in his first at-bat before lifting his home run to the second deck in right field. Gregorio said he was processing the at-bat during his unusual reaction to the slam. Relief pitcher Tyler Duffy struck out Gregorio on a high fastball Friday, a similar to pitch to the one he hit. He said, "I was ready for it this time." Finally featuring nearly all of its stars after placing 30 players on the injured list during the season, the Yankees have grinded away at the Twins' pitching. The Yankees worked 8 walks for the second straight game, and Aaron Judge led the way with 2 hits and 2 walks. Manager Duffy said, "They were really good, especially on breaking balls. If you weren't close to the plate, it didn't seem like they wanted to even think about switching." Masahiro Tanaka had amazing pitching. He pitched 1 run ball for 5 innings for the win, striking out 7 and handing off to the Yankees bullpen after 83 pitches. Tanaka's career ERA has climbed to 1.54, still second lowest by a Yankee starter with a minimum of 4 starts behind Monty Pearson's 1.01 ERA. Tanaka, through a translator, said, "I actually don't get too caught up on being in the postseason and all that. Come to think of it, I think it's still a small sample. My thing is just go out there and be the best you can. Compete." Moving over to NFL news. The Washington Redskins have made a coaching change today, but they haven't altered their stance on rookie quarterback Dwayne Haskins. Earlier this morning, the Redskins fired Gruden. Haskins has played in 1 game this season, relieving then-starter Case Keenum in the second quarter of Week 4's loss to the New York Giants. The Redskins have stressed the need to be patient with Haskins, the 15th overall pick in April's draft. Interim coach Bill Callahan said Haskins won't start versus the Miami Dolphins, but he isn't sure when Haskins will start. It's the same approach that was being taken by fired coach John Gruden. Jay Gruden's firing was not related to how they were or weren't developing Haskins, but rather it was about the coach's record. During a news conference on Monday, this afternoon, Callahan said he would either start Keenum or Colt McCoy against the Dolphins. Callahan wanted to continue giving Haskins time to develop. He said, quote, "His progress is incremental. It's starting to show signs and flashes of progress. He still has ways to go. I'm looking forward to coaching with him. I think he's a great kid. He's got a bright future. He's our franchise pick. He'll be in the lineup at some point, whether it's this or next year." He said that the goal is to develop Haskins, not rush him into playing. He also says there's a chance Haskins won't be active on game days. He continued saying, "We're going to heighten his maturation process, trying to get him on schedule so he is prepared." He continued saying, It didn't take much to figure out that he's a first-round pick, and we were putting resources into that position. I take it upon myself to be cognizant of where he needs to go and where he needs to be. His development is very, very important. There is a very good plan in place for this to happen." The Redskins have been working with Haskins on various aspects of the position to get him ready, from footwork on various pass drops to calling plays in the huddle and also reading defenses at a faster pace. They met with him early in the morning, and then again after group meetings later in the day. Haskins watches extra film at home as well. Gruden said recently that they had packages Haskins could run when he played. The Redskins have also said since the draft that it would take time because he had only started 14 games at Ohio State. Collins said he wants to see from Haskins before deeming him ready. He said continuation of preparation of focus, having success on the field, having confidence on the field, getting his confidence level up so he has a package that he can obviously go out and execute. And now, where are his, and he has ownership on the plays. That's our focus right now. Get him up, get him rolling, just like we did with Chase and Colt, no different. On to why they fired Jay Gruden was because of his 35-49-1 record in 5-plus years in Washington. The Redskins have won the NFC East under Gruden in 2015 and went 22-25-1 in the ensuing 3 years, leaving him on the hot seat an 0-5 start this season doomed him. He was fired around 5:30 a.m. this morning. Allen said, "We had much different expectations." But a big part of Allen's 13-minute news conference involved questions about his own record in nearly 10 years with the Redskins, as well as Snyder's overall mark. In Allen's 9th season, the Redskins are 59-89-1. The Redskins are 139-185-1 under Snyder with 2 playoff wins. Allen said, "We're all involved in this, and I don't want to hide from our record. I don't want to hide from the things that didn't go where we wanted them to go, and all we can do is work. And I do believe in the group that's here, yes." The Redskins were hit hard by injuries the past 2 seasons, with a combination of 52 players having gone on injured reserve. They have had 10 players on injured reserve this season, including quarterback Alex Smith. Pro Bowl tackle Trent Williams remains a holdout, and Allen said they have no plans at this time to trade him. Tight end Jordan Reed has missed all 5 games with a concussion. Moving over to other NFL news, AJ Green is out at least another week. He will not participate in this week's practices as he continues to recover from an ankle surgery. On Monday, Cincinnati coach Zach Taylor said the ninth-year receiver will not play in Sunday's game at Baltimore, which means the earliest he could make his debut would be Week 7 against Jacksonville. Taylor said that while Green will not be taking any snaps against the defense, he hopes to see the receiver start going through individual drills and the timeline to get closer. Taylor said, You don't just go into practices full-blown on your first day after being off for 2 months. There will come a time and place where we'll start working with him individually and then ease him into practice. Green has been out since he injured ligaments in his right ankle during the first practice of the preseason. Because he went through drills before the injury occurred, he was ineligible to be placed on the team's physically unable to perform list. That would have allowed the Bengals to keep an open 53-man roster spot while Green missed a minimum of 6 weeks, which is the current projected length of his absence. At the end of the preseason, the Bengals opted not to place Green on injured reserve. While he did not give a specific timeline for his return, Taylor conceded that they expected Green to be back within the first 8 weeks of the season, the minimum absence for an IR stint. Today, Taylor said there was no setback for Green, who has missed 18 games of the past 3 seasons with various injuries. Last week, the receiver worked with the team's training staff while he continued to rehab his process. Taylor said, quote, "I watch him every day on the rehab field, so I see him doing good things." The Bengals are missing him a lot to start the season. They have been terrible so far this season. Right now their record is 0-5. Every single game that they have played, they have lost, which is terrible for them. AJ Green was a big help to their success the past couple years and has helped them be able to get in big games against all of the AFC North. He's had good years and he's had bad years because of the injuries. He's been missing a little bit and he's been there for on and off a couple times, but yeah. Moving over lastly in NFL news, tight end Benjamin Watson beyond disappointed after the release from the Patriots. The Patriots released veteran tight end Benjamin Watson as his roster exemption expired at 4 p.m. Eastern time on today, making him a free agent. Watson, who had returned from a 4-game suspension last week, reacted to the decision on Twitter. Benjamin Watson, via tweet, said, quote, "The God of victory is also God in failure. I gave my all, but it was not enough to earn a spot on the Patriots roster. I'm beyond disappointed, but even more upset for my family, who has supported me with all the love a husband and father could ask for. They are my heroes." Watson said that he is in the process of determining his football plans for 2019. Also expressed thanks to Patriot owner Robert Kraft for his two stints with the franchise. The move means that Patriots will go with Matt LaCosse and second-year player Ryan Izzo at tight end. Bill Belichick noted after Sunday's 33-7 win over the Redskins that it was nice to have both tight ends active and contributing, as LaCosse had missed early time in the season with an ankle injury. Moving lastly in NBA news, Kyle Lowry and the Toronto Raptors have agreed to a one-year, $31 million contract extension that takes the five-time All-Star guard out of July's free agent market. This extension guarantees Lowry 2 years and $64 million on the books, including the $33.3 million left on his expiring contract this season. Toronto President Masai Ujiri and GM Bobby Webster, Lowry's camp, have been motivated to hammer out an extension for months. Over the weekend, they both got the deal done. This will be big for the Raptors to continue their success later in the season. It's going to be hard for them to coming into this season because it's just going to be both of them. Oh, sorry, they lost Kawhi Leonard. They're going to go from NBA champions to a little bit much less than that. It seemed that they had just got to the top of their peak, but now that the only players left that they have, the only star player that they have left is Kyle Lowry, Marc Gasol, maybe. That's being generous to Marc Gasol, but I mean, the trade was worth it for Kawhi Leonard. They got a championship out of it. 100 out of 100 times they'll take that trade, because a championship is good enough than being under LeBron's shadows for the past couple of years. Well, thanks for listening to E21 Go Sports. I'm Easton Durant. You can subscribe to us on YouTube at E21 Go Sports and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at E21 Go Sports. Thank you.
You've been listening to the E21 Go Sports Podcast, a production of Cogger Podcast Network.